There was a willow tree on one side of the big house, and that was where we questioned young Bill Streeter. Just me, Jamie, and Sheriff Peavy. The others we sent back to wait in the shade of the bunkhouse, thinking that to have too many folks around him would only upset the boy more. As it happened, he could tell us very little of what we needed to know. My da said to me that it was going to be a warm night, and I should go up to the Grays t'other side of the corral and sleep under the stars, young Bill told us. He said it'd be cooler and I'd sleep better, but I knew why. Elrod had gotten a bottle somewhere, again, and he was in drink.
That'd be Elrod Nutter? Sheriff Peavy asked.
Aye, him. Foreman of the boys, he is.
I know him well, Peavy said to us. Ain't I had him locked up half a dozen times and more? Jefferson keeps him on because he's a hell of a rider and roper, but he's one mean whore dog when he's in drink. Ain't he, young Bill?
Young Bill nodded earnestly and brushed his long hair, still dusty from all the tack he'd hidden in, out of his eyes. Yes, sir, and he had a way of taking after me, which my father knew.
Cook's apprentice, were ye? Peavy asked.
I knew he was trying to be kind, but I wish he'd mind his mouth and stop talking in the way that says once, but no more. But the boy didn't seem to notice. Bunkhouse boy, not cook's boy. He turned to Jamie and me. I make the bunks, coil the rope, cinch the bedrolls, polish the saddles, set the gates at the end of the day after the horses is turned in. Tiny Braddock taught me how to make a lasso, and I throw it pretty. Roscoe's teaching me the bow. Freddy Two-Step says he'll show me how to brand come fall.
Do well, I said, and tapped my throat.
That made him smile. They're good fellas, mostly. The smile went away as fast as it had come, like the sun going behind a cloud. Except for Elrod. He's just grouchy when he's sober, but when he's in drink, he likes to tease. Mean teasing, if you do ken it.
Ken it well, I said.
Aye, and if you don't laugh and act like it's all a joke, even if it's twisting on your hand or yanking you around on the bunkhouse floor by your hair, he gets uglier still. So when my da told me to sleep out, I took my blanket and my shaddy and I went. A word to the wise is sufficient, my da says.
What's a shaddy? Jamie asked the sheriff. Bit of canvas, Peavy said. Won't keep off the rain, but it'll keep you from getting damp after dewfall.
Where did you roll in? I asked the boy. He pointed beyond the corral, where the horses were still skiddy from the rising wind. Above us and around us, the willow sighed and danced. Pretty to hear, prettier still to look at. I guess my blanket and shaddy must still be there. I looked from where he had pointed to the tack shed hostelry where we'd found him, then to the bunkhouse. The three places made the corners of a triangle, probably a quarter mile on each side, with the corral in the middle.
How did you get from where you slept to hiding under that pile of tack, Bill? Sheriff Peavy asked.
The boy looked at him for a long time without speaking. Then the tears began to fall again. He covered them with his fingers so we wouldn't see them. I don't remember, he said. I don't remember nothing. He didn't exactly lower his hands. They seemed to drop into his lap, as if they'd grown too heavy for him to hold up. I want my da. Jamie got up and walked away with his hands stuffed deep in his back pockets. I tried to say what needed saying and couldn't. You have to remember that although Jamie and I wore guns, they weren't yet the big guns of our fathers. I'd never again be so young as before I met Susan Delgado and loved her and lost her, but I was still too young to tell this boy that his father had been torn to pieces by a monster. So I looked to Sheriff Peavy. I looked to the grown-up. Peavy took off his hat and laid it aside on the grass. Then he took the boy's hands.
Son, he said, I've got some very hard news for you. I want you to pull in a deep breath and be a man about it.
But young Bill Streeter had only 9 or 10 summers behind him, 11 at most, and he couldn't be a man about anything. He began to wail. When he did it, I saw my mother's pale, dead face, as clear as if she had been lying next to me under that willow, and I couldn't stand it. I felt like a coward, but that didn't stop me from getting up and walking away. The lad either cried himself to sleep or into unconsciousness. Jamie carried him into the big house and put him in one of the beds upstairs. He was just the son of a bunkhouse cook, but there was no one else to sleep in them, not now. Sheriff Peavy used the jing-jang to call his office, where one of the not-so-good deputies had been ordered to wait for his ring. Soon enough, DeBaria's undertaker, if there was one, would organize a little convoy of wagons to come and pick up the dead. Sheriff Peavy went into Cy Jefferson's little office and plunked himself down in a chair on rollers.
"What's next, boys?" he asked. "The Salties, I reckon, and I suppose you'll want to get up there before this wind blows into a simoom, which it certainly means to do."
He sighed.
"The boy's no good to ye, that's certain. Whatever he saw was evil enough to scrub his mind clean."
Jamie began, "Roland has a way of..." "I'm not sure what's next," I said. "I'd like to talk it over a little with my pard. We might take a little passier back up to that tack shed."
"Tracks'll be blown away by now," Peavy said, "but have at it, and may it do you well."
He shook his head.
"Telling that boy was hard. Very hard."
"You did it the right way," I said.
"Do you think so?" "Aye. Well, thank you, poor little cully. Reckon he can stay with me and the wife for a while, until we figure what comes next for him. You boys go on and palaver if it suits you. I think I'll just sit here and try to get back even with myself. No hurry about anything now. That damn thing ate well enough last night. It'll be a good while before it needs to go hunting again."